This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Yitian! And welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That's Chinese for 1,000, everyone.
Oh, very good. It is F1,000. We've done well to rename it, so I look forward to watching Formula 2000 next week at Baku. It's going to be a great time.
Formula 2000 sounds like an upcoming game on F1 game history.
2097, yep.
Yeah. Joining me are Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
I'm good. I got family in town. My sister's here, so I managed to squeeze in watching the Chinese Grand Prix while everyone was asleep, which made me very sleepy the next day when I showed them all around DC for like 7 hours. So I'm kind of like the walking dead today, but looking forward to talking about the race.
Excellent. And Robert Zachney, how are you, Rob?
Feeling a little guilty, I have to say.
Guilty? Why?
Why?
Well,
what have you done? What have you done? What have you done with the Patreon money?
You know, Bahrain was great. It was a tremendous race, and I think we were all swept up in that moment. We were like, damn, the race is this good. We can't wait on that shit for a week. We've got to talk about these games, like these races immediately. Just got to get on that. And then Danny said, watch us have a series of boring races right in a row as soon as we make the switch. And I think when I saw the field going around in the formation lap and realized they were lined up effectively by team down through the running order,
I had this
like moment where I realized that I think we might have cursed the 2019 Formula One season. It's us. We did this.
And the best part is, You're getting it twice as much as you would have.
Right. We talked, I think, after the podcast about how, or maybe it was during, about how, you know, in any eventuality, as long as we're getting it out of the way, you know, as much of the race as we'd forget in the week when it's a good race, when it's a less good race, like by the time we're talking about Baku, I'm not going to have a clue what happened to China, except for that first lap, probably. But it also lets us dive into the one interesting element of this race, which was tire strategy and undercuts. Like, that's kind of what this one ended up being, and maybe the back and forth between the Ferraris.
Yeah, and if you are just joining us for the first time this season, oh, hello, phone.
Hey, what's up? Oh, they're all calling you. They're calling you.
Yes, please give us a better race. If you are just joining us for the first time this season, this is a good opportunity to kind of get nitty gritty on tire strategy and stuff, and what, you know, the undercut is. I should also probably mention, if this is your first episode, you should probably go back and watch or listen to our primer episode to get a real rundown on the entire sport. But welcome. Also, if you are a Netflix subscriber, the Formula One documentary Drive to Survive is another fantastic primer. Not to cross promote here, but we will be doing a Patreon, probably a series of Patreon only episodes for that.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a bit. I'm sure we won't do 10. Maybe what did we say? Like maybe three of them.
Three episodes per three or four.
To
get through it. We did post recently our endurance racing episode, which was, gosh, that was, I went back and listened to that one in the editing process, and we talked about a lot of stuff. That was intense.
Yeah, because endurance racing is basically like four different types of racing all happening at the same time. So there was a lot to cover. Apologies. I did forget to mention that last week when we did our Patreon update. One more thing to mention. We crossed over into beautiful land of Blue Coast. We're at 517 patrons. Thank you so much to everyone who signed up. We'll give you an update when the beer is coming.
I pinged them and they said they're still working on it.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
But until that cold drink is in my hands.
Yeah, they're not sponsoring us. We can't egg it up that much.
Yeah, you're right.
It's all delicious.
Might be terrible. It might be incredible.
That's the nightmare. Like I have said, we already jinxed the F1 season. I think we've also jinxed our palates by doing this as a gag with this like hard to access beer. Like I think in 3 weeks we're all going to be like, so wait, like what's your next production run going to be? Like okay, put me down for 3 cases, and then we're screwed. Mm.
Well, this isn't a beer-only podcast yet, but while it's still racing, let's talk about the last race, you guys. Chinese Grand Prix 2019. Maybe we'll start with qualifying, or maybe we'll start back in free practice 3.
Yes.
When Alexander Albon crashes his Toro Rosso.
I said one of these rookies was going to have trouble on that curve. I didn't necessarily think they'd... I thought they'd crash on the inside, not the... I guess it is technically of the racetrack, but it's usually the left wall, right? But
interesting. I mean, the accident he had was classic. It's you take the corner too fast, you get on the outside, you lose control of the car. From that, I think we've seen both versions of this where I think what classically we see is a spinning skidder across the track back to the left wall on the main straight. But that's not what happened to him. I think he went all the way into the to the wall on the right hand side. But once you're off there, it is kind of a luck of the draw. And also, did you bounce off the wall? That's the other question you have to ask. But it was a serious hit. That car basically got broken down to the monocoque. After that impact, so it was pretty severe. Did you see the interview with him talking about the incident?
No.
It was, I tell you, this new cohort of drivers is so scarily poised and mature. It's really something. Like the interviewer kind of offered him an out, where she was saying, "Well, should we sort of put this down to this is your first year in F1? We've seen a lot of people have that mistake. Do you think we should also just kind of?" Set this down as sort of learning curve for a rookie on this track. And he sort of winced and he thought about it for a moment and he said, I think that is something along the lines of, I think that is an excuse, but it's not a good one. And I should have done better. And it's just interesting to me how like Leclerc, Albon, Norris, all of them are just sort of handling really tough situations and tough questions with like incredible discipline, like you'd expect from a real pro. I want to talk about just a thing to set some stage though. Before the race came out, did you see what Ferrari principal Mattia Binotto said?
No.
Mm-mm.
So before the race, he remarks that. Our drivers are free to fight on the track. And then he says that, in the next few races, we might be open to switching championship priority to Charles Leclerc. But then he says, if something we agreed with both drivers in a few races' time, things may change for whatever reason, bad luck or whatever could be the situation, we may change our position on that. I do not know what that means entirely. But I think it is just an interesting thing to bear in mind when we consider the arc the Ferraris go on across this race and the role that the pit wall plays in that whole story. But I think going into this, we should bear in mind that Binotto was open to prioritizing Leclerc, but maybe not really. We have to talk about it. I don't know.
It's really interesting. It kind of echoes what you said last week about what happened at Bahrain, which was that, like, what decision was made? Kind of no decision was the decision that was made. And, well, like, kicking that can down the road a couple of laps. Let's see how we're doing in a few laps' time. Let's see how we're doing in a few races' time. We'll figure that whole thing out. I'm surprised he answered the question at all, to be honest. I feel like even that answer is probably going to frustrate both drivers. Anyway.
Yeah. Foreshadowing for sure. Just to finish off the pre-race stuff, Grosjean had a few front wing problems in free practice, a lot of worrying shaking going on, but seemed to do I don't know, where did they end up in qualifying?
They were 9th and 10th. They were the last of the couplets going into the grid.
Also, Giovinazzi had a power unit problem. He didn't go out in qualifying, and neither did Albon, because his car was being rebuilt. So those guys will start from, I think, 19th place and 20th place, respectively. Albon starting from the pit lane.
I'm not sure if it's worth mentioning, but just because last week and the week before, we talked about the whole vibrating wing thing and whether or not we'd see that happen again. I guess that Grosjean thing was the only element of that that we saw. And again, we can't be sure whether that's at all connected to what happened in the previous two races with Ricciardo and Vettel. But I was half expecting that to sort of show up again during the race, and, you know, spoilers, it didn't. But yeah. Interesting to see it again.
Yeah.
Just quick thing from Q1, another race where Stroll doesn't make it out of Q1, which is weird because Sergio Perez was talking in the press a couple weeks ago about how just Lance Stroll is so much closer to Sergio than any of his other teammates have ever been in terms of race pace. Like, damn, like, Stroll just really... Sergio's never had an opponent like this, you know, in the garage. It's just incredible. He thinks Stroll's doing just fine, and the team absolutely shouldn't reconsider his position at all, because he's great. Way better than that scrub, Esteban Ocon. Don't even think about him. Sergio's just fine. Trust him.
Not looking forward to talking about my fantasy F1 thing at the end of this race.
Well, let's just get right into it, Danny. Let's rip the bandaid off. Want to take us through the start?
Sure. I mean, Bottas is in front. It's his seventh career pole. First time he's beaten Hamilton to pole in donkeys. I think it's like 9 races or something. But they're 2x2 basically the whole way through with Bottas, Hamilton, and then Vettel and Leclerc. So essentially, the sort of after the lights go out, the main issue that happens is that Bottas has a little bit of a slow get off the line. Not terribly bad, but enough on that long straight for Hamilton to beat him down the inside. This has a knock-on effect, basically, where Vettel sort of already on the outside of that turn, which isn't necessarily ideal, gets slowed down by Bottas, kind of can't get around him, which allows Leclerc to go up the inside of him and take that position. They're sort of battling around those turns when Perez does a great little overtake on Hülkenberg. I think it was on turn 5. But then that's completely overshadowed by the next moment, which is that Danny Kvyat, true to his name, true to his moniker, but takes out not one, but two McLarens, or hits two McLarens. The last time two McLarens went out in the first lap was USA 2006. He didn't quite break both of them. One of the cars had problems later on in the race, but his oversteering to Sainz sort of then knocked into Lando Norris, who kicked out a virtual safety car, which actually kind of worked out for the pit starting Alexander Albon, who managed to not only catch up with the pack, but get an overtake in as Lando Norris was getting back onto the track. Also, a great tweet by Norris later on that day with the shooting stars meme of his car flying through space and whatnot. It was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I retweeted that one from the Twitter account.
That wasn't even the last of their woes, unfortunately, as Sainz came in to get his nose replaced. They double-stacked them, but they couldn't get the first nose off, I think, what was happening. So it slowed them down to the point where I think Sainz was 35 seconds off Kubica by the time he got back out. Oh, and also the virtual safety car ended at the worst possible time. So they actually went into the pits and then it ended, meaning that their race was effectively over right away.
How badly do you think Kvyat screwed up? Just out of curiosity for y'all.
It's a weird... Yeah, go for it, Danny.
Messy, like clumsy, like oversteer. I don't know, like other... Like it was a grip issue where no other car had trouble getting around that. He was a bit overeager, trying to I'm not sure if he was losing a place or trying to gain a place. I forget where his track position was on the grid. Not a turn you necessarily needs to be losing grip on. So I think he just kind of was clumsy, and it's never fun being clumsy on the first lap. You tend to hit people. I think he, you know, he's been driving long enough maybe to not be doing something like that in the first lap.
Yeah, I mean, it's it looked like kind of a tough one because, I mean, everyone's starting on cold tires and stuff, and it wasn't like he made, well, It wasn't as cut and dry as like picking a direction and getting it wrong. He was turning and he loses it, and that tips him into Signs, I think, and then Signs hits him, which causes him to rotate and then hit Norris, which pops him up and sends him into space. So I don't know. You're right. I think at this point, though, Danny's been in the game long enough to kind of be able to think ahead like that. That would be my guess at that. But he does earn himself a drive-through penalty for that incident.
What do you think, Rob?
I think shit happens. Honestly, like, yeah. I mean, like, it was a clumsy move. He does bobble it, right? At the same time, one of the things you do on the first lap is, like, you try to get the best track position you can on that first lap, even above necessarily being risk-averse. And it's bad when it works out this way and you've totally wrecked two other drivers' races. At the same time, this wasn't quite like the classic torpedo move where he just runs up the back of somebody. This was he had the right angle. I think he got on the gas maybe just a bit too early at the apex and bobbled it. And you can see it's just an automatic, like, he's recovering grip on the car. But the problem is that there's nowhere else to go. If he made a mistake heading into this, it was being too ambitious, thinking he'd hold the center line of the corner all the way through in that traffic. There was a mile of track out to his right that he could have. Yeah. You'd have lost speed cutting the inside that way, but there's plenty of space. Instead, I think he was trying to hold the fast line when he didn't really own it, and he left himself no margin for error, which occurred.
I always feel like bad criticizing these incredibly talented drivers over like essentially what comes down to like a split second decision over just how much throttle to give it. But just speaking to what we were saying last week about the whole Grosjean sort of thing, like over a wide enough timeline, when you look at some of these drivers and you just see how many first lap incidents they're involved in, you're kind of like, all right, do you just have like a hair less of a, you know, of a, I don't know, mental like tenacity in that moment, maybe, that just is the difference. But it was a shame. Like I really don't want to see Daniel, you know, be shrouded by that cloud again. Like I would prefer for that to have been in the past, and my hope is that this was just, you know, one of those first lap incidents and he'll move on from it. If he doesn't in the next race, though, you're gonna have that conversation is gonna come back up again, right? And like I don't think anyone really wants that. Except maybe his teammate, I don't know.
All right, so yeah, an exciting first lap, and actually an exciting right before the first lap, Verstappen and Kubica both spin on the formation lap, which is really funny.
Oh my god!
Two in a row for Verstappen. Did you see that?
No, do you know whereabouts it was?
Let's see. It's right before. Yeah, it said Kubica spun on the hairpin, and then Verstappen, I think, the turn before that.
Okay.
Yeah, really, that's really strange.
High winds, perhaps. I watched it on demand, naturally, so I skipped the formation. Did you guys watch it on demand as well?
No, yeah. I watched DVR.
Oh, cool.
So I saw the spin, which was wild. And then when it happened again, it was clear that it was, it was tough track conditions. Speaking of which, by the way, later Bottas said that, like, literally, and again talking about like the thin margins on these cars, he literally said it was when his wheels rolled over the paint stripe in the starting box that he lost a little bit of grip.
No,
and Hamilton blew past him on that. And we all know, like, yeah, the paint is slick, but like literally for him, he was like, that was the margin. He thinks like that mistake cost him the race.
Jeez.
Not having like not handling the paint stripe well enough, which is just excruciating to think about, right? Like, he did everything right through qualifying. Like, he owned this track. And then just a little bit of wheel spin on the paint, and that's game.
Yeah, the idea that, like, 2 inches of paint, you know, will get you over a, you know, however, 150-kilometer track or whatever, you know, is ridiculous. That's F1, I guess.
Well, speaking of armchair quarterbacking, lap 10, Charles Leclerc gets a message not from his quarterback, but from his pit wall saying, go faster, we'll let Sebastian by. So Leclerc did that great move on the inside of Vettel on lap 1, but was not pulling away from him. even though he says back to his pit wall, but I'm pulling away. He was not. So he does let him by. Vettel goes by into third place, but he doesn't exactly pull away. And in fact, starts locking up a bunch of times into the corners, I guess, trying to chase down Bottas. So first of all, what do you guys think of the decision to put Leclerc aside for Vettel?
I wish I had heard Vettel's team radio, because they were doing a lot of Leclerc's, but they weren't really showing much of Sebastian's. So I was wondering if he was at all asking.
We did, though. He wasn't. We didn't hear him ask. He said, so he mentioned, I think they told him he needed to push, you need to get up closer to Leclerc. And he, Seb's in a weird place, I think, overall, just in terms of his driver's psychology. He was like, yeah, I'll try. Like, literally. So they basically gave him the green light to push up on Leclerc and maybe do an overtake. And Vettel's response was pretty lackadaisical at that moment. Like, it was definitely not a, you know, attack dog slipped from the leash type reaction. He was like, yeah, all right, I'll see what I can do. And so I think even from the first, like, I'm not sure Vettel felt super confident in pushing like that and that he had that much pace left in the car. So I don't know. Maybe there was further exchanges after that. But the first thing we heard was Vettel kind of just giving a shrug response to this question of, like, what should a driver priority be here? Then they also messaged Leclerc and mentioned that, you know, you need to push or, you know, we're going to let Vettel by. And Leclerc replies, I thought we were tire saving or something like that. It's, you know, right. Basically his understanding is the strategy is different. And so, of course, he's falling behind a little bit because he's trying to make a tire strategy work. And then, you know, they give the switch orders. And I hate everything about this, guys.
Yeah.
Ferrari, throughout my years of watching F1, I've had, like, to a degree, they've defined my fandom of F1. Like, the Schumacher years, when he was battling out with Hakkinen, were great and stuff like that. But at the same time, they do so much to make the sport more boring than it should be, because they never let their drivers race. They're always pulling this shit in every race when a conflict like this comes up. Oh, it needs to go to the pit wall for this to be adjudicated. We're not going to let these guys actually shoot it out on the track. Mercedes have let a lot of stuff go by. They've let, you know, drivers get pretty combative out there on the track. It's jeopardized seasons, but by and large, until someone clearly, like, has won that priority, they give the drivers a lot of latitude to race, provided, you know, it's a track where that is viable. Red Bull, almost to the point of being dangerous, will let these guys go at each other. And we love that stuff. As fans, that's stuff we want to see. I want to see the Leclerc-Vettel fight. What I don't want is this kind of wishy-washy, you know, let's send it back to the team to make a decision, see how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, maybe we'll discuss switching them again later. Like, it is an incredibly boring and frustrating thing to see year after year. And also, I think in this current moment, I think that entire model depends on you having a really decisive, strong personality on the pit wall who is your strategist and god king over that team.
They fired him last year, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe he wasn't the guy, but, like, right. You know, we saw Jean Todt running around this weekend. He was the last one to make that model work, and that's because maybe he had Ross Braun under him and Schumacher being dominant. This model doesn't work when you have someone who, like, I think Binotto at this point seems really indecisive. He seems really tentative about, like, what it takes to lead a team. I also think they're in a weird place where Vettel's the primary driver, but in every interview, I am just not sure he likes this as much. I'm not sure he loves the fight. And Ferrari doesn't have the best car this year. You got to fight.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, Ferrari, to their, I think defense in a way, and I'm no Ferrari apologist necessarily, but I think, you know, it's easier for the Mercedes to have that, that, you know, natural fight because they are so far ahead of everyone else. And Ferrari, you kind of feel like if they are going to bring the title to them, they need to be very strategic and clever about it. But I completely agree with you that this is like a recurring issue, and especially in this race where, like, they weren't even scrapping. Like, Vettel wasn't close to him. He had DRS as well, and he wasn't, you could tell that there, you know, he was slowing him a bit, of course, and maybe he didn't want to get into his dirty air that early in the race and wait for the call. But I think, like, in a weird way, the psychology of the pit wall is having this really, like, negative effect on both drivers, where, like, it's kind of putting them both in like a bad position. Like, Vettel doesn't want to be the, you know, the golden cow that is being protected. Like, he doesn't, I don't think he wants that either. He's like, Schumacher was happy with that a bit, you know, having the space, but I don't necessarily think Vettel, maybe in, especially in his current stage of his career, really wants that. And and Leclerc then as well is kind of like, well, I don't know, I'd kind of like to, you know, be in the ascendancy on my own terms, maybe, and not in this sort of way that you're, you know, if either of them wins the championship, it's going to be because of Ferrari's strategy or something. Like, it just seemed, I get maybe the idea behind trying to launch him if they thought that he was, you know, the Mercedes were getting away, but like the pace was nowhere near there. Like, it wasn't, they did that thing they did last year where they kept them at, you know, 15 seconds distance without killing themselves for the length of the race. So it was a real shame.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, Rob, the indecision there, it's hard not to notice it trickling down into the drivers when, over the course of this race, you're right, there was that point where he was like, I thought we were saving tires. And then later in the race, you know, they're like, okay, I think we're going to plan B. And then there was some other confusion. Like Leclerc said, like, well, why is this happening? And they said, well, okay, well, we're looking at that. We'll get back to you on that. There's just so much, like, there's no clarity here. And that's got to be really difficult as a driver.
Well, and I think that's the other thing is, like, what are the rules we're operating under here? Like, just like shortly after Vettel makes the pass and we see him struggling with the tires and flat spotting them right and left, you hear Leclerc on the radio saying he's losing time. Not sure if you want to know or not. Like, literally, yeah. He says yeah. That. Like, do you care? Like, is this about race pace or is this about Seb being in front? Like, which is it? Tell me. I'll be the soldier. But, like, what's happening here?
That's the thing, too. He seems totally down to just be clear about it. And I'm not going to fight you on it. Just let me know what you want me to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you say everything.
I was about to say that it comes up later on. I don't want to jump the gun too much, but that whole, the confidence in the teams and the clarity of the vision, I think is really summed up in what happened with the pit stop strategies later on, where, you know, one team is stacking them and getting the job done, and the other one is pulling in a driver who they put ahead and then basically sacrificing the other one as a result. Like, it was so frustrating to see.
Well, yeah, I definitely want to talk about that moment later. I think the other thing I want to bring up here is the switch to plan B so late in the race.
Yeah.
We knew there was a very good chance that optimal strategy here was two stops. We knew that going in. Like the soft had basically been garbage throughout the weekend. Nobody was going to be running that. The medium was really sort of your prime tire, but it was, you know, it's a high wear track. The hard was going to have to come out. If you're doing that, isn't there a case to be made for committing to the two-stopper early so that you can just sort of plan out your race a little more effectively rather than sort of switch in midstream late when you're probably not going to get – when you've probably already sacrificed some of the optimal performance bands of these tires and then be like, well, shit. I guess we need to do a second stop. Like, I think that's the other thing that, and I think this is a broader issue across the field. I think F1 can be a little bit groupthinky in terms of what's going to happen. You don't see a lot of team principals making big gambles early, and perhaps because when they go wrong, you look like a real schmuck. But it was striking to me how much how late the decisions were by a lot of these teams to go to two-stop strategies, when I do wonder if there was race pace left on the table by running guys really long in these first stints and even pretty far into the second.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that Hülkenberg, I think, they swapped to a two-stop right after Vettel went past Leclerc. And granted, I don't want to be taking Renault's, you know, pit strategy as, or tire strategy as the way to be going after what happened last at the last race. But, you know, again, it wasn't until Max Verstappen decided to pit that Ferrari did something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is their strategy just going to be based off of Red Bull making them uncomfortable for the rest of the season?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, so that's lap 18. Verstappen pits and tries to undercut Leclerc, but instead of Ferrari covering Leclerc, like what you would normally do to prevent Verstappen gaining that advantage on his new tires is to pit immediately after him, right? But they leave Leclerc out there and instead pit Vettel. So that, I think right there it's, well, Leclerc just... We'll just let him run around the track. That's fine. We're really focused on Vettel. We're going to try to get him as high as possible. Which, like, okay, I guess. I feel like they cut the rope too quickly on Leclerc here.
Yeah. At the very least, it did give us one of the more exciting parts of the race, which was watching Vettel attempt to warm his tires up while Verstappen was catching up on him. And at the end of the straight,
that was so good.
Oh, and you just knew at the end of the straight that was the one chance he had. You were like, your tire warmth is optimal here in comparison to Seb's, especially his ability to make his car super wide as well. I think I was, you know, delightedly shocked that while Vettel pushed him out onto the grass, both of them managed to drive away from the incident. It was a great little showing of you know, that real dangerous hard braking down the inside to make it happen, but Vettel with the, you know, the smarts making sure that he had covered it and overtook again at the exit. It was cool. It was a nice little moment.
Yeah, and what a difference a year makes, because I think it was F1's official Twitter account that tweeted a side-by-side of that move from this race and then a year ago where Verstappen hits Vettel and spins him.
Oh yeah, it was.
Yeah, God, same
and Baku,
corner.
And Baku is coming up next week.
Yes, it is. Okay, so lap 21, the cascade continues. Bottas pits and then Hamilton. Hamilton asks why they didn't pit him first, and the team responds and says that this race is going to be all about tire life in the late game. So that seems to placate him. Lap 21 is then now when we get the Leclerc pit stop, to which Brundle says that's no man's land. Like they're not going for a one stop, but they didn't cover the undercut, so this is nothing. This is why are we doing this? Like not even he could understand it. Leclerc comes out, of course, behind Verstappen in fifth, even though he was fourth when Verstappen triggered that pit stop group. Also, Leclerc did not have soft tires available. I think this is something we should also mention again for new F1 fans. You are allowed to, you must take 13 and only 13 sets of tires to each race that have to last you the entire race weekend. So that's practice, qualifying, and the race. The way that your strategy goes, or the way that the track turns out, could mean that you didn't bring enough of the right kind. So that's exactly what Leclerc ran into there.
Yeah, we saw a bunch of drivers put back on their first sets at the end of the race as well, right?
Yeah, in fact, let's just skip down here to... Ted Kravitz pointed out that Norris pits late in the race and puts on the same tires as when he collided with Danny Cafiat earlier.
Lucky socks. You know, you got to put them back on.
Yeah. Speaking of pits, shout out to the Alfa Romeo crew for looking a lot like a bunch of Judge Dredds.
Was this during Giovinazzi's terrible pit stop?
No, that's later. This is Raikkonen pitting, which leads to a great scrap for 10th place in lap 26. Raikkonen on Magnussen gets him with the old switcheroo and races by cleanly. Nice to see Raikkonen racing people. He was really lonely last season. We're actually getting to see him do, I think, what he likes doing best.
Yeah, we saw him and Grosjean have a scrap later as well. It was cool.
Yeah. Also, hey, Albon is up to 13th by lap 27 from the pit lane. I think certainly he was helped by that incident with Cafita and the McLarens, but he passes Giovinazzi on the back straight for 12th place soon after, and you know, he's got some real pace.
There's a YouTube montage of all of his overtakes, which is worth watching, because he overtook like everywhere. Like, he was overtaking on turn one on the crazy corkscrew. He was doing it on the DRS straight at the back. He was doing it on all the corners in that little that bigger section two, like all those fast paced ones. It was awesome to watch. He looked like, I say this a lot, I guess, but he looked like when you just stick on easy mode and start in a Leclerc Alpha at the back of the pack. Leclerc last season at the back of the pack, and just kind of overtake as many people as you want. It was cool.
Yeah, that was fun. The thumbnail on F1's YouTube video, it literally just says Alexander Albon overtakes everyone. Lap 29, Raikkonen catches up to Haas. Another Haas, this time it's Grosjean, does a mirror move of what Verstappen did on Vettel, but this time Raikkonen doesn't overcook it and stays ahead for ninth place. Lap 30, this is where Leclerc gets told to go to plan B. He's told to push, so he's not tire saving. I guess they're trying to chase down Verstappen. Like, again, why didn't you do this before? I don't know. Tire strategy is difficult. Computers can't even help you a lot of the time. I don't know. It seems to me like this is... It seems like something that Red Bull is really good at, where they have these contingency plans, right? That they have a strategy they're going down, but then something happens, and then boom, we're doing all of this now. You can kind of see it happen, but Ferrari's very much like, it seems to me like that something occurs in the race, and then they have to go back and talk about it for a while, and then like, I think we'll do this, instead of just making snap decisions.
Like, it's a weird thing. They're very reactive, and to a degree, the thing I'll say is, you're always going to look more foolish if your car isn't that fast. Like, they're also struggling with, how do we make an objectively slower car somehow finish above its performance, right? Like, how do we make something happen here? The problem is, their decisions let them get beaten by Red Bull, to an extent. I think that they're trying to make the best of a bad hand, but I think there's an element of, you just need to recognize this going, you recognize it going in. Like, don't get to lap 31 and be like, damn, this isn't working out well. Like, we knew early this wasn't working out well. From the moment Vettel passed Leclerc and like just didn't find any extra pace, and it turned out, oh, the Ferraris just move this fast around the circuit. Then you probably need to start thinking about like, how are you going to make the best of the situation, rather than wait until lap 31 and decide like, all right, now's the time to make a move. Now that everyone else is running their ideal strategy, let's see if we can wedge something else in here.
Verstappen wedges in another pit stop on lap 35, again causing Ferrari to pit. Sebastian Vettel, of course, him being prioritized over Leclerc, it seems. Also, Mercedes hadn't pitted in a while, and since the cars behind them just did, if a safety car had come out and compressed the field together, they would have been on super old tires, and everybody else would have been on new ones. So they pit, even though they're pretty far ahead. And probably, from my perspective, the coolest thing that happened in this race was their double-stack pit stop. So instead of pitting one lap and then pitting the other guy the second lap, they do both cars on the same lap. So Valtteri Bottas pulls in behind Lewis Hamilton in the pits, and I don't even think he stops. They turn Hamilton around so fast that Bottas just runs in, and they put on new tires on both of those cars. Super cool.
Identical pit stop times as well, 3.2 on each of them. Massive shout out to the Red Bull and Ferraris as well. Vettel's was at 2.2. We saw a couple of 2.1s, I think, at one stage during the race, and Verstappen's at 2.3. They've gotten like so good at doing these. Like, this year has been fantastic for pit stops.
My heart was in my mouth.
Yeah.
Like, because I was convinced this was one of those things where it's a call that if it goes wrong, It's like, obviously, why would you stack them up like that when you had that track position? You didn't need to do that. It worked out beautifully, but I just look at every stacked up. Like, so many times we see the sync not work out quite right, and somebody is idling for too long behind the other car, or the next change doesn't go as smoothly. It was really stunning to see them both just get basically, like, you know, training manual, like, just this is exactly how you do it, pit stops out of the deal. It was incredible.
In fairness, we did actually see a bad one in the case of the McLarens on lap one, with the busted front wing, but I guess that wasn't necessarily their fault. But
I am sure dismounting a broken front wing is a little
it's not in the they don't train for that one.
When the Mercedeses do come out, though, Leclerc splits them, gets in between, but Bottas does get by a few laps later. And by lap 41, Alexander Albon passes Grosjean and gets into the points. And for the rest of the race, does a fantastic job holding him off and gets a point at the end of the race for his 10th place and earns driver of the day, which I think is well-deserved.
Yeah, he was helped out a little bit by the Williams of Robert Kubica on lap on the penultimate lap, who looked like Grosjean was going to get the jump on him, but the back marker kind of slowed him down a little bit. It was a shame at the end of the race they didn't actually fix the camera on them to see the fight as they went down the straight the last time, but yeah, awesome to see him do that. What a drive.
Yeah. Finally, to cap off that group of pit stops, Leclerc comes in. I think, you know, he's on this kind of few laps later strategy, I guess, to give him fresher tires at the end of the race. And that kind of happens. He pits and goes on to new tires and tries to chase down Verstappen and was catching him at about a second per lap. But he needed to have kept that up for 16 laps to even get to him. And that did not happen. So lap 43, Kvyat retires. Lap 53, Norris retires. Lingering issues from that first lap incident.
He had four pit stops as well. It was an absolute nightmare of a race for Norris, who was definitely on my fantasy F1 team. The curse.
But we do get a free pit stop for Gasly, who's just racing alone all by his lonesome, and he goes for a fastest lap, and at the very last lap, secures the fastest lap and earns himself another point toward the championship. But it is Hamilton's race at the end of the day. He wins race 1000, and it is the third 1-2 for Mercedes in 2019. I think the first time that has happened since, I think they said 92. So yeah, a strong start to a season that certainly Mercedes was like, who knows which way it'll go. Yeah, and that was China. Everybody.
On paper, it doesn't really reflect what we've sort of felt, at least what we've seen and what we felt. But yeah, a very different race coming up next week. So, you know, different track, different type of race. It'll be interesting. Do you want to run down the grid where everyone else landed?
Yeah, let's do finishing position here. Hamilton on top, followed by Valtteri Bottas. Third place on the podium, Sebastian Vettel. Fourth, Max Verstappen. Leclerc in fifth, followed by Gasly, Ricciardo, Perez, Raikkonen, and Alexander Albon rounding out the top 10. Behind them in the non-points paying positions, Roman Grosjean, Lance Stroll moving up from 16th spot. Maybe there is something to his race pace after all.
I mean, he might have gotten even better if he wasn't hitting the radio button instead of the errors button. Did you see that?
Did that happen?
What? Yeah. There was one or two times during the race where you could just hear static, and then there was a message to him at one point saying, you're hitting the radio button, not the ERS deployment. So,
oh boy.
Yeah. You got to learn. You know, a lot of buttons on those. Maybe he hasn't seen Bottas's YouTube video yet.
Maybe, yeah. Someone should link him. Magnussen in 13th, followed by Sainz, Giovinazzi, George Russell, and Robert Kubica. Are the finishers. Norris was classified, but he DNF'd with floor damage after the contact with Kvyat. Also DNFs Hulkenberg and Kvyat. So the championship position now looks like this. Hamilton on top, moves up a place on Bottas. He's got 68 points. Bottas was 62. Max Verstappen in a solid third with 39. But right behind him is Vettel, who jumps Leclerc with 37 points. So Leclerc's got 36. Gasly's got 13 points now, which jumps him up four spots behind him. Raikkonen in seventh place with 12. Magnussen and Norris are tied at 8 points for eighth place. Ricciardo and Hülkenberg, teammates, they are tied with 6 points in 10th place. Perez has 5 points. Albon with 3 now. Stroll's got 2. Kvyat's got 1. And pointless are Grosjean, Sainz, Giovinazzi, George Russell, and Robert Kubica. Teams, Mercedes on top, of course, with 130 points. Ferrari's got 73. Yikes. Red Bull's with 52. Alfa Romeo and Renault are tied for fourth place with 12 points. Renault finally moving up in the world. Haas, Gene Haas, and team have 8 points along with McLaren. Nice. Racing Point Force India, nope. I made that mistake just like Martin Brundle did, I think, twice in that race. They've got 7 points. Toro Rosso has 4, and Williams has 0, unfortunately.
Yeah, they could start docking them points at this stage. It's really sad to see the just how far back those two drivers are once the checkered flag is waved. I super feel Robert Kubica must just feel like a pylon that people are just overtaking at this stage. It's really terrible. And a waste of a young talent as well. You know, it's really a big shame for them.
Yeah. So this is our post-race show. We're not going to dive too much into news because really there isn't that much. We'll get into more of that next week. But we did want to shoot it over to some emails unless you guys got some pressing stuff you want to cover before that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Danny, you want to take it to some emails?
Sure. We got a bunch of emails. I'm going to read out 3 of the goodies that rose to the top. First one's in from Eric. It says, the topic of why Danny Rick having to jump out of the car came up on the last episode. I'm an electrical engineer, so I can finally contribute something useful to F1. So the ERS system possibly energizing the car. The chassis will be at a higher electrical potential, however, there's no place for that charge to go as long as there's not a path to ground. The tires are very good insulators, so I guess that's like, what is it, like wearing rubber boots or something when you do electrical work. So it can't get through that way. And as long as the driver jumps off the car such that he doesn't make contact with both the car and the ground at the same time, they should be safe from electrical shock. Think the way that birds can sit on a power line and not get shocked. Oh, I never thought about that before. This is why they instruct drivers to climb into the top of the car and then jump off with both feet until the car can be made safe. If he were to touch the car and the ground like he would have to do if he reattached the steering wheel, he'd be the path to the ground, possibly resulting in a possibly fatal electrocution. Thanks for the podcast. Alt F1 is what got me into watching F1, and I haven't missed a race since, says Eric. Thanks so much for the email. So yeah, I guess that explains the lack of scariness getting out of the car, maybe, and also the reticence to put the steering wheel back in.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of that is just to be super duper extra safe. That's still, it's a big old battery.
Yeah, that's some scary stuff. I never knew the birds thing. Now that makes a lot more sense to me. I feel like everyone else probably knew that and I didn't.
Formula bird.
Yeah. This one comes in from Thomas Reed, just about going to the Austin GP. I feel like we get this every year, but I just wanted to bring it up again. Hi, I'll be flying to Austin this year to catch the Grand Prix of the Americas F1 race. What is the best value ticket to buy? Is general admission sufficient, or is it worth the $200 more for reserved bleacher seating, grandstands, or a specific turn? Tickets to go on sale soon. Wondering if you can cover that in the podcast or have any advice. So I guess this is for anyone who's thinking about going. Drew, when we went before, you bought the tickets. So what's your sort of take on this?
So I've never done general admission, so I can't really speak to that. But, my thinking was like, it's already going to be so expensive. You may as well get your money's worth if you can. And that meant for me doing a lot of research. YouTube is great for this because you can go and basically type in like Circuit of the Americas, turn 17 or whatever. And there will be a YouTube video from that turn, so you can kind of see what you will see. I think it's important for me, at least, to be able to see a TV. I think if you've got general admission, I think that means you can walk around the track and kind of go anywhere that's not a grandstand. So if you can find a spot where there is a TV, I like knowing that I have a place. General admission's tough for me because I'm not positive that I will be able to see a TV, that kind of thing. So that's my two cents.
Rob, do you have any insight into this? Have you gone to any races before? Or
I went to like a bunch of the ones they did out of Indianapolis. Cool. And the experience of that was, it's cool to be at a race. It's a much better experience watching it from home, particularly that track. I was on the on the main straight, which is great. You see the cars go by super fast, and that's about all you see. And so, I think it's always been a bit of a... I guess this is a broader question. What are you going to the race for? Like, what's the best way to have fun at a race? Because if you just want to see the most racing, you're probably watching from home, or you're making sure you've got a feed, like you can see a screen or something. But like, what is the way to have the most fun while you're there? Where's the experience? I guess that's my thing that I would like to know going into this. For maybe not necessarily best advantage, but just best like place to hang.
Yeah, I feel like as well, like, you know, what type of person you are at an event. You know, if you're willing to turn up early and stake your claim, or if you would rather have different angles. Like, one of the benefits, obviously, we were kind of at the turn 13, 14, 15. You're at slow, like, arena area of the track, sort of the end of section two, probably. We were there facing sort of down the straight, I guess, which means we didn't see the start of the race. We saw them take, like, maybe between turns 3 and 5, like the Maggots and Becketts bit at the top of the hill. We could kind of see them. But one of the things about general admission, I guess, is that you can kind of, you know, be at a different part of the track for different days or different races. So there's a benefit there. I definitely, the days were long, so having somewhere to sit, I think, was just handy. But I'd echo what Drew said about the screens, like at least having a TV screen so you can see, you can kind of keep up to pace on what's going on. I think that's important. I also kind of liked, I feel like me and Drew were talking during the race about how I got a real sense of the line and the grip of certain turns because we kept watching the cars, and also different cars throughout the weekend, because there was all these support races on, taking them, and it was really interesting seeing that. So I liked where we were. What I liked about it is being able to like very sort of analyze one part of the track, which was different to taking in the race. It was like a different experience. Watching the highlights afterwards was like, it was almost like watching a different, you know, thing, because I just had this, like, we had this one sort of view. Am I right in saying that the tickets we got, Drew, like, even though they were seated tickets, you could still walk around the GA areas?
I think that's right, yeah.
Because we did a lot of just, like, in between races and, in, you know, between quali and practice, kind of just bouncing around. And there's a lot of stuff to do at the Circuit of the Americas, I'll say that. There's, you know, that in the big tall tower you can go up, and there's a bunch of, like, fun stuff around. But we were mostly on the north side of the track. I know there's a whole other thing on the south side of the track, which we didn't go to. So maybe there's some benefit to being GA for that. Yeah, I'd say either way, you know, a bunch of fun. So, you know, I'd definitely go, even if you can't, you know, get the crazy tickets. I know the tickets on the main street, I'm sure, are bananas for the paddock or the grandstand.
Yeah, I think we were, I don't know what the grandstand is, but we were sitting between turns 16 and 17, so we could look across 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Right.
And kind of down the end of the long straight to that tight turn at turn 12.
Yeah, you could see like the braking zone for that, right? It was, we could see them if they were going to try down the inside, kind of right at the end of the straight.
Yeah, and then all those turns in between. So I think that was a great place to sit, because you could see a lot of different things happen. Like if you're at like one turn, it's, you want it to be like a turn that a lot of passing can happen at, right? Mm. And if that means like going back and watching a race from last year, or maybe just the highlights and seeing where a bunch of people are passing, that's also a good way to kind of get a sense for that. Because, you know, I can't always remember where, you know, is it turn 6 where a lot of passing happens? Like, yeah. yeah, YouTube's your friend, I think, on that one.
Last thing on that probably is to make sure you know what music Elect is playing on the Sunday, because maybe that weekend ticket will be worth it. We got the delightful Taylor Swift playing her only concert that year, which my wife was super pissed about, but there you go. Should have got into F1, I guess. Elton John, I believe, played another year.
Is that right? Oh man.
Yeah, you know, classic F1 crooners. Just Yeah.
Have they gotten Fleetwood Mac yet? Have they done one?
Yeah, that's
a perfect crossover.
Just do the chain over and over and over again.
I think the Chemical Brothers have.
Oh, really?
I want to say that they. I don't know.
That seems like a good mix. And then I feel like Chemical Brothers might be a good Formula E one. And the next question is about Formula E, from Fez Iman, asks, did you guys ever talk about the new attack concept Formula E is playing with? I find it really innovative and really not much less authentic than DRS. It's a neat idea that leverages the way Formula E from the start had variable power rules, the idea of having to take a non-ideal line on key parts of the track to be allowed to use it is fascinating. Personally, I'd love to get rid of the ridiculous fan boost and give all the drivers that extra power to use at their discretion as part of attack mode, especially as the cars get faster as development advances.
Wait, why is Drew sitting there shaking his head vigorously getting rid of fan boost?
I love fan boost!
Oh my god.
Yeah!
You...
Hashtag fan boost!
Oh, what a trashy feature, and now I know who it's for. Like, I've always wondered who the hell is participating in this mockery of, like, autosport fandom. Like, ooh, better text my, you know, my favorite driver's name to, and apparently it's Drew. Apparently, Drew.
I don't know that I've ever voted, but I love the idea.
I feel like they should phase it out of it. Like, it feels like a very season one, season two kind of thing, and they've changed so much about the sport. I mean, it's almost like unrecognizable from what it first started. Like, when there's no car swaps anymore, like it's so different that I'm kind of surprised it's still stuck around. But have you guys seen the do you want a refresher course
attack
on
mode?
Attack mode?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why don't you describe it?
Yeah, it's basically just like there's a designated part of the track where you are, if you take the unideal line, and it's usually long enough that you can lose places there, especially in Formula E where they're pretty much on each other's arses a lot. But if you do it, you basically get access to, I'm not sure how many times you're able to do it during the race is the only thing, but you get a boost of, say, you know, 15 horsepower or something, but it lasts for about a minute. So what you find out is that there was a good little, the race that was on last weekend was in Rome, I believe.
I think the boost is by lap now, though, isn't it? Because remember, now that when the graphic comes up, it's like there's like four pips next to the boost
attack mode. Attack mode. Yeah,
there's like four pips next to it that like light up.
I think it's
fully
minutes
charged.
Actually. I think it's 4 minutes.
Is it?
And that's what it's counting down. Yeah.
Okay.
So there was an interesting battle where one of the drivers didn't get it as they were coming around. They forgot to, basically. And there was a nice sort of back and forth where you knew one of them had the power for an extra lap before the other one was going to have it to get back. So, yeah, it's a fun. I like it. I think it adds, you know, the idea of sending somebody off the line is just very interesting. That risk reward. But yeah, if you're not watching the season this year, it's been kind of crazy. There's been like a lot of different, I don't want to spoil it, but like a lot of different drivers winning races, a lot of different teams winning races. The last race was a bit of a clusterfuck on the first lap. It was one of those, you know, Keystone Cop style pileups that we so often get, and a pretty long red flag. But it's been a fun season, and yeah, attack mode certainly has its place in it.
It reminds me of, if you've ever watched, not motocross, not cyclocross, rallycross.
Right.
Wow. That they have it's not a rally like point to point, it's a rally on a circuit, but half the circuit is concrete and the rest is gravel. So, you race on two different, it's like eight cars or something. But you are required on one of your laps, you can pick which one to take, I think it's called the Joker, where it's like a much larger turn.
Oh,
So it adds, of course, a bunch of time to your lap, but you get to pick when you do that. So I think it's the same in Formula E. You are required to take your attack mode lap, but you get to choose when to do it. Mm. I think it's a cool thing. Speaking of cool things, fantasy, you can join our fantasy team with the link in the show notes. I am currently 776th in the overall Shift F1 leaderboard. In first place, Maca F1, followed by Shunted Tarantulas, Alpha with emojis, Steering Wheel, Hey Hey, Give It To Me, Move Come On, Dragon Ball GT, The Hamiltons Break the System, Jacked Up Racing, Leclerc, Bear Flair, Mercedes All the Way, and finally in 10th place, Fry or Die. I had, let's see. Well, I did okay. I had Leclerc, Perez, Verstappen, Bottas, and then Raikkonen with Turbo Boost, which gives you double points. But I had Haas as my team, and they only got me 6. So, not great.
I had my murderer's row was Ferrari, Valtteri Bottas, Lando Norris, who got me nothing, Lance Stroll, Kimi with the boost as well, and Charles Leclerc, the one wrong Ferrari. So, not looking too good.
Social stuff. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Shift F1 Podcast. We tweet a bunch of weird F1 stuff, mostly retweets, but occasionally stuff. I was gonna, I was gonna tweet this, but I didn't because I feared it would be too nerdy. I dived into the regulations. Ooh. Which I'll place a link to that in the show notes if you really want to read like 40 pages of PDFs. It's actually pretty interesting, and it's not too tech. Well. There's technical regulations, and then there's like sporting regulations. The sporting regulations are much easier to eat, to read, not to eat. But I was trying to figure out why certain teams would retire like 3 laps from the end. And I wasn't really able to answer that question, but if you race 90% of the race distance, that's when you are classified at the end of the race. So I think it was... who was it? Norris? He technically finished even though he retired like 3 laps from the end. I don't really know why you would want to do that.
Was he jumped by the Williams, though?
Yes. So he finished technically 18th place, whereas Russell and Kubica were 16th and 17th.
Okay.
Yeah, he retired, I think, lap 53, and 90% of 56 laps is 50.4. So he technically finished, quote, finished the race. But I don't know. Like, maybe they don't want to put too much wear on the engine or their parts or whatever, and they know they're not going to get any points, so why not just be classified? I think that might actually have to... That might play into a tie at the end of the season. Like, if you tie with somebody else... who has finished the most races, I think would probably break that tie. I don't know. Please write into shiftf1podcast@gmail.com if you have the answer to this question. Why would teams retire before the end of the race?
I guess what I'd wonder then is why don't the Williams retire after that? Like, why don't we see like a concertina effect of, or a domino effect of cars retiring? You know, if the one, you know, just, I mean, it would suck. I'm glad we don't see it, but I'm just, yeah, I wonder why.
I also learned that where the transponders are, I didn't know this before, but there's one in front, which is in line with the axle, and one on either side of the driver's head. So for a total of 3. I don't know. I got really nerdy about that for some reason, and wanted to share that. Okay. Now that we have fully nerded out, it's time, Danny, to nerd out about other racing.
You mean races? Races. Oh, no, I can't say races. That doesn't set it up properly. You mean it's time to race around the world.
Yeah. That was really good. That sounded like you just played a clip of you saying that.
It's because it's been 4 seasons. 4 seasons? Has it been 5? I can't tell anymore. It should be a ringtone. It's your ringtone, right? We should make a ringtone.
This is season 3, I think, of Shift F1.
Oh, yes, Shift F1. Oh, yes. Not the podcast that shall not be named.
Right.
Lest Jeff Gerstmann will bang on our door.
I actually Sorry, I'm trying to load up my calendar here with all the racing on it.
There's just so much racing, the calendar can't take it.
Okay, here we go. Sunday, April 21st, we have Super Formula.
Beautiful. So that's Super Formula 1, Super Formula 2, Super Formula 3.
Super Formula Japan.
Super Formula, like it's the SNES
Their
version.
Their season kicks off at Suzuka Circuit.
Which prefecture?
Oh boy.
That's why he stalled, because he realized he did a thing about a Japanese sport without the prefecture.
Uh-huh.
Which is unallowed on this podcast.
That's in Inoucho, Suzuka, Mie Prefecture.
That's a real good one. I'm Googling how many prefectures are in Japan. There are 47. It's quite a lot. Yeah, it's more counties than Ireland. Fair play.
And that's it.
That's it.
That is, unless I am incorrect, that is the only race happening this weekend.
Let's all go to Japan. If we need your race lust, go to it.
Yeah.
GP2 is back. Sorry, Formula 2 is back in Baku the week after next. But we'll be talking about that on our next podcast next you guys.
If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/shiftf1. Anything else, Danny?
Fund our alcohol problem. Become a Patreon. Fund our specific mail order alcohol problem.
And Rob.
Man, I can't wait till next episode, though. There's a news article you put in the notes for this one. We didn't have time to get to it today, but we need to dig into this next week, because this is an intriguing mystery you found.
Yes. Speaking of drinking things that may or may not exist. Yes, you can become a patron if you'd like access to all of our bonus episodes. But until next time, have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next time.